Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. This is RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Ladies and gentlemen, need you to be safe out there today. We're currently under a flash flood warning. It affects the majority of Acadiana. That's Lafayette Parish, St. Landry Parish, Evangeline Parish, Acadia Parish, and North Vermilion Parish. And even if you're not in those parishes, if you're down in Iberia or St. Martin Parish, be careful there as well. Terrible conditions right now on the roads. Please be safe. Please, as we've talked about before on this show, don't be that guy with your big truck flying down the interstate or highway and knocking up foot of water on someone else.
I think we both met that guy on the drive to work this morning.
I think I met his older, more ornery brother.
Oh, okay.
And you met his younger, more irresponsible brother.
Right, yes. Right. He's like a wild, like a whip. I will say this, too, if you're coming, because I come from 190 every morning. If you get to Port Barry and you're coming from the Baton Rouge side of Port Barry, or really either side, doesn't matter. But when you get to the side of Port Barry that is closer to Baton Rouge, slow down. And I'm not saying that because the speed limit's 45 and they pull everybody over. No, there's water over the road in Port Bay. I didn't see it this morning, dude. I was coming in, and I was still doing like 65, maybe slowing down to 60 because this is like the 3 minutes in the whole drive that the rain kind of slacked off on me. And as I'm going down 190, I'm getting ready to start slowing down to get into the 45. And next thing I know, I'm throwing water everywhere. I hit this gigantic, it was almost like a pond of water straight in the middle of the road. So there's water everywhere. It's dry. I've already texted my wife to let her know, like, check the dip before you leave, because I've told you before, I live by a bayou, and there's a road that runs right next to it. It's the only way in and out of my house, and if that goes underwater, she may be stuck this morning. So my point is, there's water everywhere, even places where you think there wouldn't be water. Like, I was not expecting water over the road, over 190 going through Port Barry, and all of a sudden there it was. So my point is, there's water where you wouldn't think there is right now.
Right now, I woke up, I got out of my house, and we tend to take on a little water in my neighborhood. It drains pretty quickly. But coming out of my neighborhood and getting out on I-49, there was nothing but water everywhere. And like you said, in places that I hadn't seen in quite a long time. So please, once again, be careful out there today. We will update you throughout the show about the hazardous conditions out there on the roads. Once again, there is a flash flood warning in effect for Lafayette Parish, St. Landry, Evangeline, Acadia, North Vermilion. Okay? So if you're out there traveling, I know a lot of our listeners are our devoted callers that listen to the show every morning. Please be safe out there. A lot of you guys do a lot of traveling. You run parts, all that kind of stuff. So please be careful out there. We'd love to have you call the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111, but don't do it if it's too dangerous, please. Okay.
If I feel like you're driving, I'm going to hang up on you.
Correct. If you do want to tell us about something that's gone on, maybe where high water's at, where there's not signage out yet, or police authorities aren't out there yet, and you want to tell us, you can give us a call and let us know that, as long as you're in a safe location. Okay. So y'all be safe out there today, first and foremost, and we'll keep you posted. That being said, we do have a stellar show lined up for you today on this Thursday as we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. In the third hour, we'll be talking with two of the best. Scott Rabelais from the Baton Rouge Advocate will join us in hour number three. He'll help us preview LSU Florida State Baseball Super Regionals this weekend. You can listen to all three of those games live if necessary, the third game if necessary. But you can listen to game one on Saturday, 2 p.m. first pitch, 1:30 pregame show. And then Sunday's game two, 5 o'clock first pitch, 4:30 pregame show. You can listen to those games live right here on 103.7 The Game. So we'll have Scott Rabb coming on to help us preview that in hour number three. Also in hour number three, Les East, our friend from CrescentCitySports.com. He's going to help us give us any updates on the Anthony Davis trade situation. What about those rumors heating up that the Lakers are once again in the mix? Maybe they can give the best package after all? Or is it the Brooklyn Nets? We'll get his thoughts. Plus, he'll dive deep into the New Orleans Saints' third week of OTAs and the two latest inductees, or excuse me, three individuals honored by the Saints Hall of Fame. We'll also talk to James Yasko of the Lehman Time Time podcast. The Strohs continue to streak. We'll get his thoughts on that. And then our good friend John Marques from the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. He's going to be joining us later this hour to give his thoughts about the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, because it is Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame weekend this weekend in Natchitoches. But we're going to start off with the Saints Hall of Fame class for 2019 was announced yesterday. And it couldn't get much better than what they did. Marcus Colston and Reggie Bush. The first pick for the Saints in the 2006 NFL Draft. The last pick in the 2006 NFL Draft. Two key components, foundation pieces for not only the team's resurgence and return to the city of New Orleans following the devastation of Hurricane Katrina, but also two foundation pieces and stars that would help the franchise win its first, and as of this moment, only Lombardi Trophy. Obviously, they came from vastly different backgrounds. Colston was the late round pick, right? Complete unknown out of Hofstra. I remember when he was drafted, people had him as a tight end in some publications and in some reports because they didn't have any clue what he was. He came out of Hofstra, a little tiny football champion subdivision school. The football program was so bad at that school that they disbanded it in 2009. And as I said, when he was drafted, some reports had him as a tight end because they had no idea who the hell Marcus Colston was. He was the fourth to last pick in the 255-player draft in 2006. Bush, meanwhile, was the Heisman Trophy winner, one of the most sensational collegiate players I'd ever seen. Played at USC during their dynasty run. He was one of the most celebrated and decorated players in college football history, and he fell to the Saints with the second overall pick because the Houston Texans selected Mario Williams instead. And those two guys, those two draft picks in the first draft following Hurricane Katrina, the first draft of Sean Payton as the head coach, the first draft with Drew Brees as the quarterback, those two guys from wildly different backgrounds, they have wildly different personalities. Reggie loved the stardom. He dated a Kardashian. Then he ended up marrying a girl that looks just like a Kardashian. Colston is soft-spoken, barely hear from. He rewrote all the record books for pass-catching skill players in Saints history. Reggie Bush became an all-pro and a pro bowler.
Yeah, Mark Soule still never made the Pro Bowl.
Never made.
Not one time.
Not one
not
time.
Not a single I almost cursed time. Ah, makes me mad. Sorry for yelling.
He also played in an era where the diva wide receiver still reigned supreme. That was part of the issue with Colson never getting the love nationally than he probably deserved, was because of that, was because he still played in an era of Chad Johnson and Terrell Owens in diva wide receivers left and right. And then other guys who weren't divas who were just considered the elite pass catchers of their era. Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison. I mean, he played in that era. And he played in New Orleans. And let's be honest, a lot of the focus when it came to the Saints was the head coach and the quarterback, not Marcus Colston. Hell, when they drafted and developed Jimmy Graham became this Pro Bowler All-Pro. The focus was all about him. You never heard about Marcus Colston. Yet, when the game was on the line, and when Drew Brees needed to throw a touchdown pass to someone, it wasn't Jimmy Graham, was it? It was always Marcus Colston. And it's such wildly different pass, and yet 13 years after they arrived as those bookend members of that famed 2006 draft class that helped lay the foundation for the Saints becoming one of the best franchises in the NFL, including winning a Super Bowl, they were introduced as the two players that will be inducted into the Saints Hall of Fame, and that will officially happen during the Arizona Cardinals game during the regular season. This is what Colson had to say about this, and he's a very quiet dude. The fact that they got this type of quote is amazing. "I'm just truly humbled to be on this stage and to be part of this Hall of Fame with so many other great players," Colson said at the Saints training facility on Wednesday. "When you come to the league as a seventh-round pick, something like this isn't really on your radar." Also part of this class, and also well-deserving, former Governor Kathleen Blanco received the Florida Lee Award for off-the-field contributions to the club. She was instrumental, and people forget this about Governor Blanco, she was instrumental in keeping the Saints in New Orleans. She's the one that helped spearhead the post-Katrina renovation of the Superdome. Blanco.
I believe there's a plaque somewhere on the Superdome that honors her. Something.
Yeah, and they also renamed the they had just renamed during the season, Cody, remember, they renamed, or right after the season, I want to say the concourse area, or an area inside the Superdome after her.
Okay, you see, and that might be what I'm remembering. I knew there was some sort of acknowledgement for her for that.
Blanco, our former governor who's currently battling melanoma, a rare form of incurable eye cancer, said, "This is extraordinary. I'm very proud to feel like I'm a family member of the Saints now." And you go back and you think about that draft class, and Sean Payton was there on hand for the ceremony, debuting his new shaved head, by the way, which became a bit of a trending topic on the Twitters.
You meme that any way you want.
He has a Raymond haircut. He looks like a tennis ball. I like it. I like it myself. I like it. I was like, all right, Sean's coming home with me. All right. Good for him.
Now I want a tennis ball that looks like Sean Payton.
I'll probably make that happen for you. Remember, Colston and Bush were the bookend selections of Sean Payton's first draft class and formed the core of the club's eventual Super Bowl championship. That 8-man class featured 6 players that would enjoy 10-plus year careers in the NFL. Bush, Colston, Roman Harper, Jahari Evans, Rob Ninkovich, and Zach Strief. In 10 seasons with the Saints, Colson set club records for career receptions, yards, touchdowns. His 28 100-yard receiving games are tied for first in club history. All 72 of his touchdown passes, all 72, came on passes from Drew Brees, making the duo the 6th most prolific combination in scoring pass plays in NFL history. Bush, meanwhile, was one of the most dynamic big play threats in franchise history. In his 5 seasons with the Saints from 2006 to 2010, he recorded nearly 5,000 all-purpose yards, scored 33 touchdowns. He rushed for more than 2,000 yards and 17 touchdowns, caught nearly 300 balls for more than 2,000. He had more receiving yards than he did rushing yards. He also returned 5 punts for touchdowns, including that amazing 83-yard return in that 45-14 whooping of Arizona in the divisional round of the Super Bowl year. When that cat got into open space, whew, sensational. So a terrific, terrific two guys that were part of now the historic 2006 draft class are going to be inducted into the Saints Hall of Fame, as well as our former governor who helped spearhead the renovations at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. So a terrific class all in all. I will come back and circle back about this class later in the show, because I also want to make a point about Reggie Bush, who I feel is now underappreciated for what he really did bring to the Saints in that offense. I think we kind of look at him differently because his career flamed out after he left the Saints and everything that's happened since then with giving the Heisman back and everything like that. But let me tell you something. Reggie Bush allowed that offense to perform at a high level. It let Deuce McAllister have more years to his career and be even more effective. And having that pass-catching threat out of the backfield like that allowed guys like Devery Henderson just to run free in the secondary, allowed Marcus Colston, allowed Jeremy Shockey to revitalize his career because he was washed up when he came to New Orleans. Reggie Bush was instrumental in the Saints' resurgence, and he deserves the credit, and I'm glad to see the Saints are inducting him into the Hall of Fame. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, got more sports talk, and we'll give you a weather update. Please be safe out there, Acadiana, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Once again, be safe out there. We're currently under a flash flood warning for the majority of Acadiana. There's road closures. There's high water everywhere. Okay? Flash flood warning for Lafayette Parish, St. Landry Parish, Evangeline Parish, Acadia Parish, and North Vermilion Parish. Okay? It also, you should be careful if you're down there in the Barry and Iberia Parish and over in St. Martin Parish. As Cody talked to you about before, Highway 90, it's got high water in multiple places. I told you about high water along I-49 and off the service roads there as well. You listened to Tanya's traffic report during the break. So, look, there's high water everywhere, flash flood warnings, severe weather. Please be careful out there if you're driving in this weather or being forced to drive because of work. Take your time. Have both hands on the wheel. Don't go super fast. If you're going to be late for work, be late for work. It's better to be safe than sorry. So y'all be careful out there today. And we'll keep you updated with any weather updates throughout the show. But back to sports. Antoine Duplantis, the former Lafayette High Mighty Lion, 4-year starter for the LSU baseball team, one of the most revered players on the team and by the fan base. Oh, by the way, he's also the LSU career hits leader. Finally got drafted. A year after being selected in the 7th round and deciding to come back for his senior year, and he's, of course, helped LSU into the Super Regional round. They'll be playing Florida State this weekend. One of the best baseball players to ever do it. At one of the best programs, you could argue, the best college baseball program of all time. And yet, where was he selected? In the 12th round. With the 358th overall pick by the New York Mets. That's right, and I'm going with Mets. I'm not saying Mets. I'm saying Mets because they're awful. Now, the Metropolitans also decided to take Jake Mangum?
Mangum.
Mississippi State. He's the all-time SEC hits leader. They took him late on day 2. So you can make the joke that the Mets are trying to accumulate an all-SEC outfield with already having Tim Tebow in the organization. Maybe so. And you know DePlantis will work hard, and he will likely work his way up through the ranks there in the Mets farm system. But if you're trying to tell me that there are 357 better baseball players on the amateur level, which is high school and college, if you're trying to tell me there's 357 better players than Antoine DePlantis, then you're huffing paint thinner. That is just crazy talk. You're taking your crazy pills. But this is what happens for a team first guy that comes back for his senior season. And this is how he gets rewarded by big league ball clubs. I talked about it earlier in the week. This could be my rant. Hint, hint, wink, wink. We're going to throw it up on the Twitter poll, our Twitter poll question on the 1037 The Game Twitter account. I want to hear from you guys. Do you believe that there's 357 better amateur baseball players than Antoine DePlantis? By all means, vote. Tell your friends to vote. But be safe while doing it. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk to John Marques of the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com right here on 1037 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 1037 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Once again, please be safe out there on the roads today. There's a flash flood warning in effect for a majority of Acadiana. That includes Lafayette Parish, St. Landry Parish, Evangeline Parish, Acadia Parish, and parts of Vermilion, North Vermilion area. Also be safe out there in St. Martin and Iberia parishes as well. Severe weather is blanketing the area as we speak, and we'll be here for a while. There's several places throughout Acadiana that there's already high water. So be careful. Take your time, and don't be in a rush to get anywhere. Just be safe out there today. We got severe weather going on. Once again, flash flood warning in effect for the majority of Acadiana. Let's get back to the sports talk. This weekend is the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony weekend. Press conference will be later today. Several events on Friday, and then the actual ceremony where former athletes and coaches, some of the best and brightest from the state of Louisiana, are inducted, as well as not one but two Distinguished Service Awards and Sports Journalism recipients will be inducted. We're going to talk all about the Hall of Fame and the Hall of Fame weekend with our next guest from the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. It's our good friend. He joins us every Thursday, the one and only John Marques. John, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Doing well, Ray. How about you?
Doing well. Trying to stay dry, trying to stay safe down here in our neck of the woods. But let's talk. Go ahead, son.
Well, when you head north today, it'll be a little bit drier.
I appreciate that and looking forward to that. If I can just get to that part of the state will be my biggest challenge. John, let's talk about the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. All transparency, you and I are both voters. We're part of the voting committee, have been for a while, you longer than I, and that has nothing to do with our age difference, I assure you. But that said, let's talk about, I want to talk about your column and who you wrote about in your column that's being inducted this weekend. But I just want to talk about the Hall of Fame in general. You've been part of it for so long. Walk me through it. When did you first get involved, maybe as a proxy voter or as a regular voter? And what does that mean to you to be able to be part of the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame in a voting capacity?
I mean, it's a great honor and great responsibility. I want to say sometime in the mid-90s was my first voting opportunity as a proxy. And, you know, and one of the highlights of my career was being able to help, you know, usher in Billy Allgood, who was the longtime athletic director and coach up here at Louisiana College, who, you know, was one of the most colorful characters in college basketball in our state's history, which is saying something considering some of the coaches we've had, like Burl Shipley and Lenny Vance and Ralph Ward, Leon Barmore, Scotty Robertson's, and, you know, Billy Allgood was right in there. And, you know, that to me was one of the highlights of my career. But you know, when you – I mean, and you can speak for yourself, but when you go into that meeting or when Doug Ireland, the executive director, sends out the ballot, you know, he usually does it a few weeks before we actually meet in August. And, you know, and not before he puts in the new candidates who are just now eligible, but when you go through the thing and you just see the people who have been on the ballot who can't get in, I mean, you can make a Hall of Fame just from that. I mean, it's a great responsibility, and you just see the rich history of sports in this state that, you know, there's so many worthy candidates. And, you know, I've shared a story with Doug and a few others that, you know, I've traveled and been fortunate to go to other state Hall of Fames. And I give a classic example of Colorado that there's a member of their Hall of Fame. Oh, it's Babe Diedrichson from your former neck of the woods in Beaumont. You know, and there's a Babe Diedrichson monument there by I-10. She's in the Colorado Sports Hall of Fame. Do you know why she's in the Colorado Sports Hall of Fame?
Because she won a tournament there once?
No, she married someone from Colorado. That is how desperate they are to find worthy candidates. We don't have that problem in Louisiana. Nope. And it's you know, and it's a blessing to you know, if you love sports and you live in Louisiana, consider yourself fortunate.
Talking with John Marques of the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. John, for years, it definitely was a passion project for the LSWA members to do what they could to help bring awareness, to help raise funds, to help persuade the state to build the state-of-the-art museum that's now located there on Front Street. For years, the Hall of Fame was held the actual Hall of Fame itself was inside Prather Coliseum, right, on the campus of Northwestern State. And they finally got its, you know, an actual home all by itself, a beautiful museum. And if anyone gets the chance, they should go check it out. If not this weekend, any weekend or during the week, it's well worth the trip to see the history of the sports in our state. But talk a little bit about that, because you were part of that as well. And that was a long, winding road, right, to get to that point where the museum was finally built, constructed. And, you know, I remember being there for induction weekend. We put in Shaq and the whole nine yards, and it was a huge deal for us to finally have the museum on Front Street. Talk a little bit about that process and how long it really was for you, the LSWA and the rest of the state, to be able to get the museum built where it's at right now.
You know, I think I began my career in sports in this state in 1990, and even then people were talking about a museum, and it wasn't until later in the 90s that talk started building to, hey, we really need a building. Because, I mean, did you ever go into the old Hall of Fame and Prather Coliseum, Ray?
Yeah, actually I did, but not to just go see the Hall of Fame. I would do it to kill time before Northwestern State doubleheader between the women and the men.
Well, I remember being in fifth grade, and my mom was getting her master's from Northwestern, and I knew they had the Hall of Fame, so I said, well, look, let me go up with you for the rehearsal and all the stuff you got to do before the ceremony. I want to go to the Hall of Fame. And you talk about a disappointment. You're walking through, and it's basically in the lobby, and it's not much there. Not a bunch of artifacts, but nothing to explain what the artifacts are. And so, you know, and you start seeing all these other states with these grand Hall of Fames, and it was just, it was depressing. And then finally some momentum got going to build it, and a lot of it was due to our great friend, Philip Timothy. A lot of the movement started under his tenure as you know, president of the Louisiana Sports Writers Association, but then it continued because, I mean, it's like anything in this state. Nothing comes easy, especially when you start involving politics and you start talking about the capital outlay budget where construction projects are funded. And, you know, I can't tell you how many starts and stops and starts and stops. And, you know, it was a really, you know, you were invited to the groundbreaking. You're like, well, is this really going to happen? And then it happened, and then you start seeing the building come up, and, you know, and now, you know, it really is the jewel of Front Street. If anybody's ever been to Natchitoches, a beautiful historic town in Louisiana. And, you know, now Louisiana's got a Sports Hall of Fame building and museum to be proud of.
We're talking with John Marques of the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Glad you mentioned our mutual friend and mentor, PT, Philip Timothy. He's one of the recipients of the Distinguished Service Award. That's what you wrote your column about this week that everyone can go check out at thetowntalk.com. And for our listeners, you know, some of them may remember Philip Timothy as his time working for a long time working at the Daily Advertiser there in the 1990s. And he did incredible work there collaborating with Bruce Brown, one of our Five Guys Stories and Lies host, and as well as Kevin Foote, the longtime reporter at the Daily Advertiser, now at the Acadiana Advocate. You tell a great story in the column where you tried to apply for a job, you tried to get a job, it ended up not working out for you, John, and then you and Phillip's friendship developed from kind of took off from there because you guys worked together. Can you share that with everyone, please?
Yeah, it was in the probably late 90s. I was covering LSU, really was covering basketball, Dale Brown's last year, and the Advertiser had an opening to cover LSU, and Phillip wanted to hire me, and his bosses overruled him, and you know, I'll be honest, they made the right hire. The guy they hired went from the Advertiser straight to Sports Illustrated. I didn't have the talent to go to Sports Illustrated, so they made the right hire. But a few months later, Phillip's dad died, and you know, when I went to see him, because Phillip, for people that don't know, Phillip is from Alexandria, Pineville. This is where he grew up. His parents were up here. And, you know, Phillip was just burned out. You know, that job, as you well know, being a sports editor in any town, you know, this is a stressful job, a lot of hours you don't get paid for. And he was just burned out. And he said all he wanted to do was cover high schools and outdoors. And, you know, a few weeks later, as luck would have it, we had an opening at the Town Talk, and I was assistant sports editor, and I went to my boss, Jim Butler, who was the managing editor, and I said, we need to hire him, and we did, and, you know, he was able to move back home, raise his children where he could actually spend time with them, see him play, you know, football and powerlift at Buckeye High School and all these other things that he wouldn't have been able to do in Lafayette, and, you know, just being able to work side by side with him on a daily basis, you know, you talk about the impact he had on your career, the impact he had on my career. You know, you could say that about so many other people that he's impacted and touched. You know, Kevin Foote is a classic example as well, you know, mentoring him. And so, you know, it's going to be a special night to see him get the honor that he's so deserving of.
And to be fair too, John, it was a well-deserved honor, and we voted him as a DSA award winner, despite his pleas of not doing so. So we just ignored him, which sometimes we have to do with Philip, right? I mean, we just have to sometimes just ignore the big fella.
Yeah, his current employers had a little celebration for him. And I said the great thing about Philip and I is we're vent partners. I can vent to him, and he goes in one ear and out the other. He can vent to me. It goes in one ear and out the other, and that was one of the things, because he didn't think he was worthy of the DSA. There were so many other people, and he just wanted his name off the ballot. Well, you know, apparently his wife was overhearing all that. So after he hung up, she called me and said, hey, look, please keep his name on the ballot. So I said, okay, we'll keep his name on the ballot, and we'll just blame Glenn Quibido and let him take the blame. So that's what we did.
Yeah, that's what we did. And the best compliment I've ever received in my almost now two-decade career is, and I don't even know if you remember this, John, so Philip had been moved to a different department covering, they had the special outdoors magazine, remember, that we had for a while there, mm-hmm. at the Town Talk, and you hired me off
the one that Gannett would not let us call Gun and Tackle.
That's right. That's right. And Philip was pretty much in charge of that. So they needed a page designer, a copy editor, and a writer. So you moved me in from the regular newspaper desk, the Universal desk, to replace Philip. And it was a learning process and everything like that. And Philip was known, as you wrote in your column, about being extremely stubborn and passionate and fiery about certain things. And you and I got into an argument one night. I can't remember what it was about. I have no idea what it was about. I just remember you and I were raising our voices to one each other. And we calmed down, and about an hour later, you came by my desk, and you just stood by my desk, and you just looked at me, and you said, "It's as if Philip never left this department." And I took that as the greatest compliment I've ever received in this business, because I was like, all right, yeah, that works.
You know, and the thing about Philip is we would have staff meetings on a weekly basis. This is before you came into sports, and we'd go over what we're going to talk about. He'd be on board, and we'd go into the staff meeting, and we'd bring up something, and Philip would take the contrarian approach, just blindside me, and he did it on purpose just to see the rise he could get out of me and the reaction of all the others. And you just see the smirk on his face. I mean, that's Philip.
That's Philip. You know? That's Philip. We love him. We love him. And it's going to be great seeing him inducted this weekend into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Brother, John, you're my good friend, man. I appreciate you writing that story on Philip like you did and the column that you wrote. And I can't wait to see you this weekend, man, as we see our friend enshrined into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. I appreciate you making the time, as always.
No problem. Have safe travels.
It's John Marques. Town Talk, towntalk.com. Yeah, we took a little moment talking about a good friend of ours getting inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. Well-deserved honor. We'll have a special Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame edition of RP3 and Company tomorrow, as I'll be broadcasting live from Natchitoches. We'll have plenty of interviews with the Hall of Famers, Roger Cador, Les Miles, and others. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the first hour here of RP3 and Company. Before we go, the flash flood warning for Acadiana has been extended until almost 9 o'clock now. That affects Lafayette Parish, St. Landry Parish, Vermilion, Evangeline, St. Landry, most of Acadiana. So please continue to be safe out there on the roads. We got to hit a break. You're listening to 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Once again, the flash flood warning for Acadiana has been extended to nearly 9 o'clock a.m. That affects Lafayette Parish, St. Landry Parish, Acadia Parish, Evangeline Parish, North Vermilion. There's also severe weather throughout the rest of the area, including St. Martin and Iberia parishes. So high water is on the roads. There's some intersections that have already been closed down. Please be careful out there if you're having to travel for work purposes. If you don't need to leave your house, don't. Just don't. And if you do need to be on the road, make sure to be safe. Look out for high water. There's high water in places that typically there isn't. So please be careful if you're out there on the roadways. We will keep you posted about the severe weather. We talked earlier about Antoine Duplantis finally being drafted in the 12th round by the New York Mets and how that took way too long. We also need to touch on a Raging Cajun player. Gunnar Leger did not hear his name called through 40 rounds of the Major League Baseball amateur draft. A little surprising. I know he did not have a great year. He had to be put to the bullpen. He never really fully recovered from having to miss all of last season due to injury and having to have not one but two surgeries. But this is, and what makes this so much more disappointing is here's a guy that was the Sun Belt Freshman of the Year in 2015, All-American second team by D1 Baseball, Freshman All-American. He was named a Collegiate Baseball All-American in 2017. ABCA Rawlings All-American, and then came the injuries. He could have let himself be drafted, get that signing bonus. Instead, he was like, I need some surgeries. I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to sit out a season. I'm going to come back for the Raging Cajuns. And he put the team first. He didn't try to hoodwink Major League Baseball teams. And here he sits back and didn't get drafted. It's a shame. Gunnar Leger is a good kid, good young man. Would have been great to see him be drafted. But it didn't happen, unfortunately, for the Raging Cajun star. That's going to do it for the first hour. Coming up, more sports talk right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Down low to Leonard on Steph Curry, gonna go to work, backs him in, floats it up and in with the left hand, ring the bell, school is in, Toronto up 111-94.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Before we kick off hour two, talking a little NBA Finals Game 3 action. Once again, flash flood warning is in effect until almost 9 o'clock this morning. For the majority of Acadiana, that includes the parishes of Lafayette, St. Landry, Evangeline, Acadia, Vermilion. Also be careful out there in Iberia, in St. Martin as well. High water is everywhere. Be careful. And be alert, because there's high water in places that normally there is not. So make sure to please be careful out there on the roads this morning. Now let's get back to the sports talk. Game 3 of the NBA Finals was last night. We know Klay Thompson was held out. He fought to play in the game after suffering that hammy injury that sidelined him for the remainder of Game 2, which, back in Toronto, which the Golden State Warriors won to even the series 1-1. And we know they're already out without Kevin Durant. So no KD so far. Then they had to be out without Klay Thompson last night, who pleaded his case wanting to play in the game. They decided, Steve Kerr and the Warriors decided not to play him. Steph Curry went off like a monster. 47 points, the former league MVP did. 47 points. And it wasn't even nearly enough to beat the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors won the game 123-109. And it really even wasn't that close. For all the people that have made the argument that Klay Thompson is not a valuable asset for the Golden State Warriors, you may want to reconsider that stance. Curry is great. Curry is a phenomenal talent. He is a former league MVP. The guy is helping change the way the game is played because of his three-point shot. But the Warriors are at their best when they have both Splash Brothers out there. And no Klay Thompson last night, and it was apparent who the better team was. I've said this from jump. Toronto has depth. Toronto has a chip on their shoulder, and they're not intimidated by the Warriors. If Toronto's bench steps up and outperforms Golden State's bench, Toronto can win the series. And so far, they are. And look at last night. Yeah, Steph Curry dropped 47, played 43 minutes. Tremendous effort. 8 rebounds and 7 assists. The Golden State Warriors only had 2 other guys scoring double figures.
That's it.
Draymond had 17 points and 7 boards, and Iggy only had 11 points. That's it. They needed Klay Thompson, not only for his three-point shot, but for his defense. They need Kevin Durant, not only for the fact that he's maybe the best scorer with the ball in his hand from inside the three-point range that we have in the league. I think you can make that argument. He's gone. They miss him. So they don't have either one of those guys. Steph drops 47 points, and they still lost by double digits. Think about that. A league MVP drops 47 points in an NBA Finals game, and they lost by double digits. And the reason why they lost by double digits is because the Raptors are balanced. Yes, Kawhi Leonard led the way for his team, 30 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. He will carry this team to a championship if the bench keeps playing the way it does, or the way it has, rather. He had 30, but you know what else? Kyle Lowry stepped up after having a fan shove him in the face. Stay classy, fans. Stay classy. Lowry had 23 points and 9 assists. Danny Green, who has struggled mightily throughout the postseason. This is a guy, a veteran player who knows how to score. He was just awful trying to score the ball. He had 18 points last night. Fred VanVleet, great name. He chipped in 11. Mark Gasol, 17 points. Pascal, 18. You see what happens? That's 6 different players in double figures. Kawhi leads the way. He's the leader. He sets the tone. He's the best player on the court. He gets 30, but he has everyone else help him out. Not to mention, big up for the Raptors because Gasol, Leonard, and Danny Green were not on this team last year. They shook up the team, and they needed to do so. Gasol was an addition this year by the trade deadline. It's just not, you know, they have Kawhi, but they have all these other guys that are stepping up. And as much as the Warriors miss Klay, his shot in those points, boy, it would have been great if you had a healthy Klay Thompson out there guarding one of those other guys. Kawhi's going to get his, right? And Toronto conceded to Golden State on the flip side of that. All right, Steph, you can have yours. That's fine. Get after it. But Steph Curry can't beat the Toronto Raptors by himself. Once again, Steph Curry had 47 points and they still lost by double digits because no one else was able to step up because Toronto clamped down on the other guys on the floor that were inserted. Iggy had 11 points, but he wasn't very effective. Remember the story out of game two was, oh, look at Boogie Cousins. Do you know what Boogie Cousins did last night? The former New Orleans Pelican? He played 19 minutes and scored 4 points. 4. Not effective. Iggy only had 11. The next closest guy the Warriors had to double figures was Quinn Cook with 9. If you're depending on Quinn Cook to be your 4th best scorer, you have issues. So what do we make of this series now? People thought, there was talk, because people thought that this series was going to be so dull that Golden State, even without Kevin Durant, remember the narrative was just a week and a half ago, well, the Warriors are going to win themselves another championship. They're going to win 3 in a row, the first team to do that since the second three-peat of the Chicago Bulls under Michael Jordan. It's great that the Raptors got to their first NBA Finals, but this is a done deal. The narrative was, what is Golden State going to do in the offseason after they prove that they don't need Kevin Durant to win an NBA Finals? What are they going to do? That was the narrative. That's not the narrative right now, is it? We wake up this morning, and the defending champs, two-time defending champs, have a depleted roster. Two of their best three players, they have four great players on that team, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. Two of those four are injured. Even if Klay comes back for game four, he's still not going to be 100%. Is Kevin Durant even going to make an appearance during this NBA Finals? He didn't play at all in the Western Conference Finals in the sweep over Portland. And also complicating things for this Golden State team, and I've said this before, the team that won the NBA championship without Kevin Durant and the next year lost to LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and the Cavs, yes, they didn't have Kevin Durant on that team, right? And they've won the past two championships after adding KD. You're exactly correct. But you know what the difference was on those Warrior teams back then? They had depth. They had role players, and they had effective role players. They had a whole second unit that could come out there and keep the tempo up and keep the defensive pressure up and keep the foot on the pedal. They don't have that now because they have to pay Draymond, Steph, Klay, and Kevin Durant, and eventually you run out of money. And due to free agency and due to salaries, they don't have the type of depth they have when they made that great run pre-Kevin Durant. And even the first year of Kevin Durant, where they got the extra room under the salary cap because of that weird rule in the CBA. And they took advantage of it by adding Kevin Durant. But they don't have that depth now. Not only do they not have the depth that they have had in years past, Kevin Durant is not playing. He's injured. And now Klay Thompson is injured. And you have a Toronto team led by the silent, I don't like shaking hands or laughing or showing any emotion, Kawhi Leonard, who is an absolute killer on the court. Just does not care. That guy, the only thing that guy cares about is playing ball. He doesn't need your dap. He doesn't need your recognition. He doesn't need any honors. He doesn't need any of that. He just wants to go out there and win. And that's the difference in this Toronto team this year and compared to years past. Because years past, they didn't know how to have that. They didn't have that killer instinct. And now you have a team led by the Raptors. Now, you have a team in the Raptors led by Kawhi Leonard that's already won a world championship. He's an NBA Finals MVP. He knows what it takes to take down the best player or the best team on the planet. He did it when he beat the Miami Heat as a member of the San Antonio Spurs when the Miami Heat had D-Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron James. And this team is veteran. You have Mark Gasol. You have Ibaka. Ibaka's played in an NBA Finals with the Oklahoma City Thunder. The dynamic has changed. This is a veteran-laden team that likes to play defense and gets after it. And they find themselves now up 2-1, and they took a game in Golden State's place. They went into Oracle and won by double figures last night. Golden State, if they want to win this series, it's going to have to go 7 now. And they're going to have Klay, and I feel like they have to have Kevin Durant back too. They just don't have the depth without those guys to be able to go toe-to-toe with Toronto. It's become apparent now that that's going to be an issue for this series. And it raised its ugly head last night for the Dubs. Can they turn it around? Can they win 3 games in a row? Absolutely. They get Klay Thompson back, they can shoot the lights out of the gym and make this a series and win this series by winning 3 straight games. Yes, they could do that. But what have you seen in the first 3 games of the series that suggests that this Golden State team versus this Raptors team can win 3 games in a row? It seems like it's a bad matchup. So we'll see. But right now, the Raptors are up 2-1 in the NBA Finals. And Drake's throwing shade to Klay Thompson. They're having a little bit of a social media beef, which is hilarious. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Houston Astros, they were streaking. They still are, even with last night's loss. I'll explain right here on 103.7 The Game.
Why? thrilled. Deep to left center. Kiss it goodbye. Into the second deck. Grand slam for Edwin Encarnacion, and it's 10-1 Seattle.
A little anger in that swing from Encarnacion. Struck out his last two times, but got all of that one.
And beg your pardon, just a three-run home run. So it's 9-1 Seattle.
That game got out of hand so quickly that the announcer thought the home run was just a grand slam. He's like, I might as well be. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Once again, severe weather throughout Acadiana. You guys be safe out there today. If you can stay off the roads, do so. Stay at home. I know a lot of our listeners, a lot of the fans of the show, drive early in the morning. A lot of them are delivery men. A lot of them run parts. I get that. So y'all just be safe out there, okay? Please be careful because the flash flood warning is still in effect until almost 9 o'clock for Lafayette Parish, St. Landry Parish, Evangeline Parish, North Vermilion, Acadia. Severe weather everywhere. High water in places where there's normally not. So please be careful out there if you have to be on the roads. If not, stay at home. Just let your work know that you'll be late today. That clip you heard was Houston Astros, who dropped a game at the Seattle Mariners. They had already taken the first two games of this series. They lost last night to drop to 42-21 overall. This was just an odd game. They lost 14-1 to the Mariners. 14-1 to Seattle.
They had a lead for a second.
These things, they happen. The Astros weren't particularly good at the plate, even though they took an early one-run lead there in the first. They were only held to six hits. Bregman, of course, had one of those hits, as you can anticipate. Brantley had a hit. Josh Reddick had a couple of hits. Tony Kemp had a couple of hits. But the Mariners, they just exploded. 14 runs on 13 hits. They plated two in the fifth, seven in the sixth. And then just because they could, they're like, you know what? How about five more? Let's put a five up on the board in the eighth. Give the fans their money's worth. Brad Peacock started the game. He actually was pretty good. Five innings, only gave up two earned runs on four hits. He struck out six. But then when they went to the bullpen, things started coming off the rail. Gooden came in. He only lasted a third of an inning. He gave up three runs on two hits. And then his replacement, Brady Rogers, came in for two innings. He was even worse. Eight runs on six hits. Woof. Bullpen let him down. Things got out of hand. 14-1. 14-1. What do we take from that? Nothing. I'm just going to say it. Nothing. I'm not saying that because 103.7 The Game and our sister station, KVOL, The Rewind, are your home for Houston Astros baseball throughout Acadiana, and that I went to a Houston Astros game last week and they treated me very kindly. I'm not saying that because of that. I'm saying that this is one of the best teams in Major League Baseball, and you're going to have a stinker. They happen. It's a really long season. And you're going to have some games that you're just going to scratch your head and you go, well, that sucked. And that's what occurred last night. Once again, Astros have a depleted roster, depleted lineup. Your bullpen gets roughed up. Some middle relievers get roughed up. Do you really think that Seattle's now all of a sudden going to turn things around and be a contender in the American League West?
I mean, you said they were going to send the fans home happy. I almost going to be like, you mean fan?
Seattle's actually a pretty good sports town. pretty good sports town. But the Mariners are terrible. So, yeah, there wasn't a lot of people there on a Wednesday night checking out the M's taking on the Astros.
In Seattle, though, obviously best known for being the headquarters of the Pokemon Company USA, though. Obviously, one of the only Pokemon centers where you can go buy all the swag and everything Pokemon related is in Seattle. So
absolutely,
big ups to that.
Because when people think Seattle, they don't think of Nirvana. They don't think of coffee houses.
No, they do.
They don't think of the alt rock movement of the 90s.
Sure.
They don't think of
fish markets and
the things. Fish markets. A very entertaining MTV Real World season that took place in Seattle. They don't think of any of these. They don't think of Ken Griffey Jr., the best baseball player I've seen in my lifetime. They don't think of the Seahawks and winning a Super Bowl, or the Seahawks former coach blaming losing a Super Bowl on the refs. None of those things come to mind. They think Pokemon USA headquarters?
That's what I think, at least, at the very least.
You should have seen
Cody Schuchs doing what he does best, interrupting sports talk with
Fika?
Not sports talk.
My man.
A lot of people do think Pokemon when they think Seattle, though. Maybe not as many as think the things you brought up, but it is the headquarters of Pokemon in the United States. So if you're a Pokemon fan, when you think Seattle.
Kid, I have a question. A legitimate question.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I give you hell, but I got to ask you a question.
Fair enough.
Can you go tour the headquarters?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you can get a picture taken like with a big giant Pikachu?
I mean, probably. I don't know that for sure, but I would imagine there's a big giant Pikachu. I would imagine there's mascots and things, I would think.
All right.
Never been able to go, though. One day. I have family in Seattle now. They implanted family, moved up there. So.
Well, now you have an excuse to go.
Exactly.
When we come back, we're going to talk with James Yasko of the Lima Time Time podcast right here on 103.7 The Game.
Cannot wait. I'm yours.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 1133 in HD. Once again, reminder, severe weather out there. We are still under, even though the rain has stopped right here by the studios, you still see a lot of flooded areas. We're still under a flash flood warning until nearly 9 o'clock, guys, for Lafayette Parish, St. Landry Parish, Evangeline Parish, Acadia Parish, North Vermilion, and also severe weather throughout Acadiana. So please be careful. Avoid the high water. If you don't need to be on the roads, stay off of them, please. Right now it's time for us to head back out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline to welcome on our next guest. He's the co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast, diehard Houston Astros fan, and apparently has some type of beef with Jason Mraz. We're going to dive deeper into that as we welcome on James Yasko to the show. James, how are you doing this morning, brother?
Cody, you better hope that the flash flood gets in before I get down there and take care of him for playing that crap in my intro.
I'm quite certain I don't know what you're referring to, James.
It took me a second. I was like, there's no way. Like, there's no way that Amazon is this powerful that it can read my thoughts, that how much I hate Jason Mraz. That would be the intro. And then I remembered, that cursed website, Facebook. So yeah, Cody, I'm coming. I'm gassing up, and I'll be there. I can be there in about 6 hours.
Just don't lose your keys.
Oh, nice. Nice. James, we'll get to the entertaining question you put out there on the Book of Face later. But I want to get your thoughts on the Stros. I had an opportunity. I know we talked last week. While I was over in Houston, I caught the game live last week when they faced off the Cubs there on Wednesday night. I know they lost in spectacular fashion last night. It was a rout. They have a depleted roster. And, look, the bullpen just melted down, and the Mariners had their best game of the year. They probably won't score double-digit runs again for the remainder of the season. These games happen. But to this point right now, with everything that the Astros have had to deal with, Carrera's injury, Altuve's injury, Springer's injury, having to send the young man that was supposed to be part of the rotation back down to AAA, we'll get to that as well. What are your thoughts on where your Astros are right now here at the beginning of June?
I mean, it's fine. I mean, well, it's not fine with all the injuries, but I mean, last night it was 2-1 until the AAA guy and the guy coming back from Tommy John surgery came in. And so, I mean, it's not like, you know, the Mariners torched Gerrit Cole for 14 runs or Justin right. Verlander gave up 5 home runs. I mean, it's, you know, the Hinch said before the game he didn't want to use Presley or Osuna, and so that's how we got a combination of Raymond Goodwin, Brady Rogers, and Tyler White pitching, who, as it turns out, might be a better pitcher than he is a hitter right now because he only gave up the one. He gave up the same number of home runs last night as he's hit all year, one. So, you know, it's just one of those things. They're going to be okay. Their last night sucked, but they've got Verlander going at, what is it, 2:40 Central Time today. So, you know, back it happens. One of those things.
We're on with James Yasko of the Lehman Time Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, look, we knew this team was going to be excellent, right? This is a team that won a World Series 2 seasons ago, reached the ALCS last year, and they added a piece. And they lost a couple guys, but they added a good piece like Brantley and stuff like that. So we knew that this team was going to be in the mix. Are you surprised at all that not even having Altuve out there and him performing at a high level, with the exception of that home run surge he had there earlier in the season, he's been, you know, this is the heart and soul of that team, and he's been sidelined with injury, and yet here they are, and they are still just rolling right through the schedule and just rolling through the American League West. Are you surprised at all that they're performing at such a high level despite all the injuries?
Yes. I mean, if you take 3 legit MVP candidates out of a lineup for an extended period of time, you don't expect the offense to be doing what it is. The Astros lost 500 innings between Morton and Keuchel and McCullers last year. And there's an article on MLB.com this morning that says they have the lowest team, I mean, it's rotation, I don't know, the lowest allowed on base percentage in baseball history. So yeah, this is surprising. The injuries came at a good time in the schedule. You know, after they played Seattle today, they had the getaway day and start a series with Baltimore, you know, tomorrow. Like it's a good time to let these guys heal up and get ready for the rest of the season. But yeah, it's losing as much pitching as they did, and the injuries that they've gone through. To say that they're 42-21 is pretty impressive.
We're on with James Yasko of the Lima Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, it was announced yesterday that Altuve, Springer, and Diaz have all are getting their rehab stints their minor league rehab assignments before returning to the Astros. Altuve took batting practice on the field back-to-back days for the first time since rejoining the club after being pulled back from his rehab assignment. He's been out since May the 10th. He was supposed to run again yesterday after running on Monday. How quickly do we think Altuve is going to be getting back to his minor league rehab assignment?
Well, apparently the plan is to reassess and get a more definitive timeline when they get back to Houston. I guess it probably won't be later today, but tomorrow. But I still think that the way the schedule is going to go, they're going to err on the side of caution, sort of how we sort of want them to for a team I think the expectation is to go to the World Series again. And so I don't think they're in any kind of hurry to get those guys back, but obviously, you know, the sooner the better. You'd like for their rehab stints to go well and go quickly and they get back to rejoining the team. But I don't think they're going to sacrifice, you know, risking another rehab stint or another get pulled back again because they hurried them back to face the Orioles.
Right. There's no point of wasting them against the Orioles, right? I mean, it's
right.
If you're still succeeding and you're still piling up wins left and right, you don't have to rush your guys back. So you're at a position of power here and you can take your time. I know Carlos Correa remains in Houston as he continues to recover from that cracked rib that he suffered during the massage. So he's still going to be another month and a half probably. What have you heard about Colin McHugh? Because I know there was talk about, you know, he's got the right elbow discomfort. There's talk about having him maybe throw off the mound before the team leaves Seattle. But it's possible that he probably won't be doing that until they come back for the homestand. He's been out since May the 21st, but he has been playing some catch, reports are. What are you been hearing about Colin McHugh?
He threw off the mound yesterday before the game. So he had an 18-pitch bullpen session, all fastballs, and apparently said it went pretty well. So, again, I don't think there's a huge rush to get him back, but everyone's trending in the right direction. Like, there's no – not that the Astros are terribly good about giving an accurate representation of anyone's injury, but there's no red flags, there's no alarm bells. It's just a waiting game at this point for pretty much everybody.
We're talking with James Yasko, the Lima Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Let's talk a little bit about Corbin Martin. The command issues raised its ugly head in Monday's start, right, against the Mariners, and now he's been optioned down to AAA Round Rock. So what do we feel? Do we feel like Corbin needs a little bit more seasoning, that he just needs to maybe regain that confidence in his control? Could we see him down in AAA for about a month and a half or so, in your opinion, James?
I think so. You know, and it's weird, the command issues that he saw in the majors, you know, we didn't see those in his first start against the Rangers. Like, they only popped up over his last four starts. And he didn't have command issues in the minors. Like, he had a 2.8. He sort of averaged 2.8 walks per nine innings in the minors, and it doubled to 5.6 in the majors. I haven't talked to Corbin Martin, but it sort of looked like, you know, he's following up Verlander, he's following up Cole in the rotation, and he's trying to be too precise rather than just relying on the stuff that he has. You know, he tried to nibble at the corners, and when you're a rookie pitcher with major league umpires, they're not going to give you a whole lot. There's not a whole lot of lead. You don't have Justin Verlander's strike zone. And so I think he just, you know, the game just got away from him. And the more he fell behind, the more precise he tried to be. And he never really settled in any of those last four starts. So I think it's the right call to send him back down, get him some confidence. You know, he had his opportunity. Didn't really take advantage of it outside of that Ranger start, and wait for the next one to come up.
We're talking with James Yasko, the Lima Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, Major League Baseball draft wrapped up yesterday, 40 rounds. Oh. But that said, the Astros did get themselves some tremendous players. I know in the first round they took the Corey Lee kid right out of California. That's the catcher, the right-handed catcher. And then they took Kessinger in the second round. That's the kid, the shortstop out of Ole Miss, who I've seen. What do you think of the draft picks? And are any of the guys that they took maybe in the early rounds kind of stand out to you?
I don't watch a ton of college baseball. I've been paying attention to the draft long enough to know you don't have to pay too much attention to the draft because, yeah, this kid struck out 100 kids in high school, but, you know, you have no idea if the kids that he was facing in high school were like 5'4 and a buck 10. So we saw the fruits of the 2012 draft in 2017. Like, it's a longer game than it is if you watch the NFL draft or the NBA draft. You generally don't get to see the guys of tomorrow. You see the guys of a couple weeks from now. But of the first 10 rounds, you know, I think the one that's most intriguing to me is the third round pick, Jordan Brewer, out of Michigan, transferred from a junior college, and his first year at Michigan was this season, and he was the Big Ten Player of the Year. And he's from up north, you know, with a longer season and with the Astros, with the Astros' ability to develop players. He could be really fun to watch. So he's the one that stands out the most to me of the first 10 rounds.
And, of course, Blair Henley, the pitcher out of Texas, has taken in the seventh round. He's a four-year junior there for the Longhorns. Anytime you get an in-state kid, I know that's probably a big deal for some of the fan base. I don't know that much about Henley. Well, what's the buzz about him over there in your neck of the woods about taking a UT guy?
Yeah, you know, it's – I was talking to some UT guys that pay way more attention to UT baseball than I do. And they were like, yeah, he's all right. He's got a pretty good spin rate, which is what the Astros look for. But he came into UT as a well-rounded pitcher who throws in the high 80s and low 90s. And he's going to leave UT as a well-rounded pitcher who throws in the high 80s and low 90s. Like, not that they weren't impressed with him, but I don't think he made the jump over his time at UT that they sort of thought he would. So,
maybe,
you know,
he doesn't have that high of a ceiling.
He might be one of those like pretty high floor, but not as high of a ceiling kind of guy.
I got you. Well, James, we'll wrap it up with this, brother. So tell the folks, we let off the show. Obviously, Cody decided to throw a little shade your way. So tell the people why we brought up Jason Mraz and what inspired you to bring him up on social media.
I hate that guy. Like, he's just the freaking fedoras and these little, like, acoustic love ballads. Like, he's just a wuss, and I would love to sort of dust him behind an HEB of his choosing. So if you're listening, Jason Mraz, everyone else thinks you're cute, but I know what's up.
James Yasko knows what's up. Take that, Jason Mraz. I guess what you're telling us is that Jason Mraz will not be making an appearance on the Lima Time podcast, is what you're telling
me. I'd love for him to, but he knows better.
James Yasko is out of school crafting young minds, and my man is already raring to go. Already starting beefs with pop stars. I love it. James, keep up the great work, brother. Let us know, when is the next Lima Time podcast dropping?
It actually dropped last night. So the episode 101 is up right now.
Perfect. Make sure to go check that out. James, appreciate your time as always, brother. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, sounds good. Thanks.
It's James Yasko, co-host of the Lima Time podcast, breaking down all things Astros for us.
He was trying to hide it, but the Facebook post said, name any musician you are 100% certain you could take in a fight. He goes, I'll start Jason Mraz.
His hatred for Jason Mraz makes him feel like he can beat him up. I love that.
I was thinking Taylor Swift, maybe. I think I can take her.
I know. I don't be offended, but I think I'd put money on
no,
Swift.
No, I'm not offended. As I said, I think. Not offended at all. She's tall. She's got the reach advantage on me. I saw someone say they could take Meatloaf because they would just wear him down. They would use their speed and agility until he got tired. And then, bam, like the knockout blow.
When we come back here.
Two out of three ain't bad, Raymond.
Oh, there it is. We come back here on RP3 and Company. We'll wrap up the second hour right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Coming up in the third hour after the break, we'll have Les East on from CrescentCitySports.com. He's going to break down Saints Hall of Fame as well as OTAs for us and any updates on the Anthony Davis situation with the New Orleans Pelicans. And then later in our final hour, we'll be talking with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate. He'll help us preview LSU-Florida State Super Regional this weekend at the Box. Once again, we are under a flash flood warning for the majority of Acadiana. That's Lafayette, St. Landry, Evangeline, Acadia, North Vermilion parishes, as well as be careful out in St. Martin and Iberia and St. Mary as well. Just a couple of updates here. Closed right now here in Lafayette Parish, portions of Camellia Boulevard. Traffic control is underway at North University and Railroad Underpass. Areas that are experiencing flooding here in the past hour or so: Ambassador at Robley, Ambassador at Ridge, Ambassador at Eras Landry, portions of St. John Street, portions of the Evangeline Thruway, Mall Street from Glorious Switch past Willow as well. The Scott Police Department has also closed the following roadways due to high water. Barricades have been in place. That's St. Ann at Cameron, Old Spanish Trail and Sunset due to high water off of Perez, Windborne at Provost, and Westward at Vincent. Police say that residents should not move or go around the barricades. They are in place to protect you as well. And high water is on Evangeline Thruway still. Johnston and Camellia. Intersection is flooded. No travel through that. And Vera School Road and East Milton Avenue hazard. So please be careful out there, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to be talking Who Dat with Les East right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. We let off today's show talking about Saints Hall of Fame. Yesterday, they had the presser. Sean Payton was involved, where they unveiled the two new inductees, being the first pick and the last pick of that historic 2006 draft for the Saints. The first draft of the Sean Payton era, Drew Brees era, post-Katrina era. Reggie Bush, second overall pick. Marcus Colston, the fourth to the last overall pick. Both guys are going to be going into the Saints Hall of Fame. They'll be joined by former Governor Kathleen Blanco, who was instrumental in the recovery efforts and the renovations, pushing those through for the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. So well-deserving there across the board. Also, once again, we talked about it before the break. Please be careful out there. We have an extended flash flood warning for the majority of Acadiana. That includes the parishes of Lafayette, St. Landry, Vermilion, Evangeline, Acadia. There's also severe weather threats there in Iberia and St. Martin parishes as well. So please be careful. High water all across the way. There's high water in places. Intersections have been closed down. The whole nine yards. So please just be careful. Once again, high water has been reported across the Evangeline Thruway. There's also high water on Johnston, and the intersection of Johnston and Camellia is flooded. No travel through there, as last reported. Also, Verrett School Road and East Milton Avenue, that's a hazard. So please be careful out there. Also, the Scott Police Department has closed the following roadways due to high water. Barricades are in place in Scott. That's at St. Anne and Cameron. Old Spanish Trail and Sunset due to high water on Perez. Also, Windborne at Provost and westward at Vincent. Police are recommending residents should not move or go around barricades. If there's a barricade up, it's up for a reason. The barricade is not up to challenge you to try to find a way around it. If city officials, town officials, parish officials, and the police force have put up barricades, they've done that for a reason. So find another way to get where you're going or just stay at home. Don't try to go around the barricades. Don't think that your truck or your vehicle is big enough, strong enough, whatever, to get around there. Okay? Because you know what's going to happen if you decide to go around the barricade like that? Your car is going to stall, it's going to get stuck, and then you're going to have to get it towed and have to file an insurance claim. So don't do that.
abide the barricades. Okay, just that's all you got to do. So please be safe out there this morning. I know in some areas the rain has subsided, but that does not mean that you should be going out there running through the water, high water marks, or going around barricades. Be safe out there. We're still under a flash flood warning for the majority of Acadiana. So please be safe. We now head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans for CrescentCitySports.com. It's our good friend, the one and only, Les East. Les, how you doing this morning, brother?
Doing well, Raymond. How are you?
I'm doing great. So let's talk about the Hall of Fame yesterday. They make the announcement on who the two athletes are going to be. They also gave the Florida Lee Award to former Governor Kathleen Blanco, well-deserving honor. Reggie Bush, Marcus Colston. Two totally different backgrounds, came in with totally different hype, drafted in polar opposites of one another, and yet both were instrumental in the foundation that would become the Super Bowl championship. Your thoughts on the two members that are going to be inducted into the Saints Hall of Fame later this year during the game with the Arizona Cardinals?
Well, it was really a no-brainer in both cases. I'm on the committee that selects who gets into the Hall of Fame, who gets the Joe Gemelli Award. And there was probably a little more discussion about Reggie than there was about Marcus, simply because Reggie was here 4 years or 5 years, I guess, and Marcus was here 10 years. So Marcus was able to put up much more significant numbers. He was, I think he may have been voted in by acclamation. There was no question he was going to get in. And Reggie was going to get in. It's just that it wasn't quite as much of a slam dunk because his career was a little bit shorter. But as you mentioned, two of the cornerstones of what Sean Payton began building in 2006 and what reached a peak in 2009 with the Super Bowl championship could not be any more different. Personality-wise, in how they got here, in what the expectations of them were, and yet they were two vitally important people to the Super Bowl championship and to building this program beginning back in 2006. And we're really at the point now with the Hall of Fame. This has been going on for a couple of years and will continue, where there are just so many guys from that era, 2006 through 2009 especially, but also more recently, so many guys who were a big part of that turnaround have begun retiring. And so there are a lot of guys going in. Many have already gone in, and there will be more to go in the coming years as we celebrate the heyday of this franchise.
We're speaking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, I opened up today's show giving my thoughts on Reggie Bush, and I feel like in a lot of ways he's underappreciated now exactly what he brought to the table. I know you could make the argument, and it would be a legit argument, that he never, for his full career in the NFL, he never really lived up to the expectations that came with coming out of USC with the Heisman Trophy in his hand and multiple national championships and being the number two overall pick. But he was a key cog in that offense, and his ability to be able to catch the ball out of the backfield allowed that offense to really flourish and allowed Sean Payton and Drew Brees to be able to do what they did for years to come with all the other pieces. I mean, you could make the argument, right, if there's no Reggie Bush, you may not have Deuce McAllister be revitalized. You may not have Jeremy Shockey be able to come to New Orleans and get his career back on track, because the threat of Reggie catching the ball out of the backfield was so dangerous that opposing defenses had to game plan for it, even though he may not be a factor in the game.
Yeah, I agree completely. And that's one of the things we talked at length about when discussing his candidacy for being included in the Hall of Fame, is the numbers, which are very impressive, tell the whole story of Reggie Bush. You're right. Probably if you look at the hype coming out of USC as the most dynamic player to come out of college football in I don't know how long, playing for the national championship team at Southern Cal, one of the blue bloods of college football, the expectations were unrealistic, especially for a guy who was not all that big. He wasn't going to be carrying the ball 25, 30 times a game. So the numbers didn't live up to unrealistic expectations, yet at the same time, they don't do justice to the impact that he had. And one of the major things is what you touched on. As soon as he went on the field, the defense had to react. They had to have one or more players immediately identify Reggie, get into position to try and deal with him, whether he was in the backfield, whether he was lined up as a wideout, because he was so dynamic. If he got the ball in space, especially if he was one-on-one with a linebacker, it was going to be dangerous for the defense. And so he created all kinds of mismatches and concerns for the defense that created or enhanced opportunities for other people, whether it was Deuce McAllister or Pierre Thomas or Lance Moore or Jeremy Shockey or countless other people. There was a huge impact there that helped the Saints succeed on offense that transcends his numbers, which even though they weren't as good as maybe some people anticipated, were still very good. The numbers alone were good enough to get him into the Saints Hall of Fame, and yet his value was even greater than that.
We're talking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, Sean Payton said yesterday during the press conference, first of all, by the way, debuting a new hairstyle, which I approve of as I have a similar haircut. So, but despite that, and in spite of that, he was also asked, you know, who would they have taken if Reggie wasn't there at number two? And I think he surprised some folks when he said they would have had slotted, they were going to be taking A.J. Hawk, the linebacker out of Ohio State, who eventually went at number five overall by the Green Bay Packers. Were you surprised by that, or was that something that was already known by people that had been covering the Saints for years, that they had their eyes on A.J. Hawk in that draft?
I think it was well known that A.J. Hawk was a guy who's in that bullpen, but I don't think it was commonly known that, that they had targeted him. I think certainly there was an expectation that Mario Williams, who the Texans ultimately picked number one, was going to be in the mix. There was such a need to shore up that defense that had Reggie not been there, they almost certainly would have gone defense at that point in the draft. But I don't think anybody thought that or knew that Hawk was a guy they had targeted, but it was known that he was a guy who was definitely on their radar and would have been in the mix. You know, Payton said that before it became known that the Texans were going to pass on Reggie, which wasn't known until the night before the draft, that the Saints had briefed owner Tom Benson on four or five players that they were looking at, and they really didn't bother with Reggie because they didn't think he would be there. And then when word leaked that the Texans were going to take Mario Williams, they kind of had to go back and tell Mr. Benson about Reggie, that they were going to pick him because they really didn't expect him to be there. And real quickly about Peyton's haircut, I asked him about that on the side afterward because I don't recall seeing him with his hair cut quite that closely. But a close friend of his who was actually a college roommate, he's close friends with this individual and his wife, and this person apparently is undergoing chemo treatments, and he and some buddies played golf here in the last few days, and they shaved their heads in support of their friend from college who's undergoing chemo treatment. So anybody who's taken a bath by seeing the new haircut, that's sort of the background on that.
It's a great cause for Sean Payton to take part in there. Les, that 2006 draft class, I mean, you just look at it. Reggie Bush in the first round, Roman Harper, who ended up being a Pro Bowler, and really a leader on that defense for a decade. In the second round out of Alabama, Jahari Evans out of Bloomsburg there in the fourth. He became a mainstay on the offensive line. Rob Ninkovich actually went on to have, I think, a better career with the New England Patriots, but the Saints took him in the fifth. And then Zach Strief and Marcus Colston in the seventh. Is that is this going to go down as maybe the best draft class in Saints history?
I don't know. I always consider it one of the three best. 81 and 86 were also great drafts. If you look at the 81 draft that Bump Phillips orchestrated, both of those drafts I think had more players. And 81 had, I don't remember everyone, but I know that Jim Wilkes and Frank Warren, the two defensive linemen, they had George Rogers, of course, at the top. A lot of players that Jim Mora had success with even after Bump Phillips was gone 5 or 6 years later. And then Jim Finks' first draft in 1986 that started with Jim Dombrowski and I think included Dalton Hilliard, maybe even Reuben Mays. Those were really tremendous drafts. This is definitely in the top three, but I think if you go back and look at the depth in 81 and 86, they're at least the equal of 06. And Peyton told an interesting story. I think this has been told before, but, you know, the draft, I believe it was the start of the second day. The Texans, again, had the first pick. The Saints had the second pick. Peyton was on the phone with Owen Daniels, the tight end, and they were going to pick him. And Daniels got a call on his call waiting, put Peyton on hold, and it was the Texans calling to pick him. And Peyton was just flabbergasted. He thought for sure they were getting Owen Daniels, who would have been a great addition to that passing game as well. Turns out they went to plan B, which was Jerry Evans. So as it turned out, they couldn't have gone wrong with either one of those guys, and probably a lot of doing better with Jerry Evans, who's got a chance to end up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame someday.
Les, I know OTAs are wrapping up this week. They had media availability earlier in the week. Minicamp is next week, and then we'll take a break before training camp. Anything stood out to you earlier this week that was non-Hall of Fame related when it came to the Saints there during OTAs?
No, not really. Drew Brees didn't participate on Monday. On Tuesday, these are voluntary workouts, so that, I don't think there's anything significant there. Teddy Bridgewater ran the first-team offense in his absence. Everybody else moved up a notch. Bridgewater seems a little more comfortable, a little more confident second year in the offense. So that was notable. Jared Cook has certainly been impressive. Michael Thomas, as he always is, has been impressive. You know, one of the significant traits about him is he runs every practice rep like it's the last play of the Super Bowl and the game's on the line. And he hasn't let up at all, even during OTAs. So he has stood out, there's just a lot of guys out there running around in shorts and shirts and no hitting going on. So you can't really tell a whole lot, especially about the linemen at this point. But I would say that you can certainly see why Jared Cook was one of their big targets in free agency and will be a big target in the passing game this season as well. It'll be interesting next week. The fans will be allowed out for the three minicamp practices. That always puts a little pep in the step of the players because if the fans get into it a lot, there's usually a pretty good crowd, even on weekdays. So that'll add a little something, a little dynamic to the festivities. But it'll be training camp and preseason before we start to get a little bit of a handle on some of the new players who have come in.
Les, appreciate you making time for us as always. One quick question, real quick before we let you go, brother. Anthony Davis trade rumors are swirling once again, building up some momentum. I don't want to ask you your thoughts on whether the Lakers are back in the mix or not or anything like that. What I want to get your thoughts on, is he going to be traded by the draft?
I think he will be, and by the draft, sometime, not necessarily before the first team goes on the clock, which, of course, is the Pelicans, but, yes, sometime, I think, leading up to or during draft night, I think they will have some sort of trade in place. That's my expectation. if it doesn't happen that quickly, I wouldn't panic about it, but I think that's the most likely scenario.
Les, appreciate you as always, brother. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Raymond.
Les East, CrescentCitySports.com, talking Who Dats with us right here on RP3 and Company. We got to hit a break. We'll be back after this on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every single year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it, guys. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Real quick before we have to hit a break here, just want to put out there, Mondo Duplantis fell short of winning the outdoor national championship in the pole vault yesterday as Chris Nielsen of South Dakota would go on to win the event. He's the number two pole vaulter in the world. Duplantis falls just short of winning the outdoor championship in the NCAAs, the former Lafayette High star. Will he gear up for the Olympics now? I don't know. But we'll ask our next guest. He may know. Scott Rabelais, advocate, joins us. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Once again, reminder, Acadiana, you're still under a flash flood warning. I know in some spots the rain has subsided, but please remain to be careful. We just had the Cairn Crow Police Department come out here and put barricades out on the road behind the Delta Media Studios for high water there. Other departments of municipalities across Acadiana, Scott, the Lafayette Parish, Lafayette City, everything. They're putting up barricades. They're redirecting traffic. There's high water everywhere on the Evangeline Thruway, high water in Scott, here in Cairn Crow. So please be careful. If you see high water, try to avoid it. If you see a barricade, don't go around it. Don't be that guy or gal that decides that just because you got a lift kit in your truck that you can go around it. Don't do that. Don't take a chance. Those barricades are up for a reason to protect you. So please abide by them. Be careful. If you don't need to be out on the roads right now, do not do so. Now let's get back to the sports talk. LSU, Florida State, it may be the best, most marquee matchup of the Super Regional weekend. LSU will be taking on FSU Saturday in Game 1 there at Alex Box Stadium. First pitch scheduled for 2 o'clock, pregame 1:30. You can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He's going to give us his thoughts on the Super Regional matchup. It's the award-winning columnist, Scott Rabelais from the Baton Rouge Advocate. Scott, how are you doing this morning, brother?
I'm fine. Looking at flooded streets in my neighborhood, too. There's a lot of water out there this morning, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately, and a lot of water came down quickly, and that's always alarming. So hopefully you and your family will be safe over there in the Baton Rouge area.
Thank you.
Rab, let's talk about this weekend. Thankfully now LSU doesn't have to play until Saturday, which actually looks to be a blessing in disguise with the severe weather coming through today and tomorrow. Let's talk about this matchup, though, because you're talking about two of the best programs in college baseball history. And you have two of the best coaches in the game right now. their programs are going to square off. It's stunning to me with all the history between the two programs. This is going to be the first time Florida State is going to be playing inside Alex Box Stadium. Is that correct?
In the current stadium, yeah. They played here in 1983, and they came to the old Winn-Dixie Showdown at the Superdome.
Okay.
But these teams have never met in the regional or super regional play. They've met in the World Series. The LSU beat them twice in Omaha 2 years ago, as a matter of fact. But, yeah, first time in a super regional, first time they come to the new box or to Baton Rouge at all since 1983. Really kind of strange since they're so close together and they both have such excellent programs. But they're going to meet this weekend with maybe some of the biggest games they've ever played, that's for sure.
We're talking with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Rab, from listening to Paul Menary's press conference earlier this week, there seems to be an enormous amount of respect for Florida State's head coach, Mike Martin, who's retiring after this year, after 40 years of being at the helm of the Seminoles. He even talked about watching Florida State when he was, you know, coming up as a player and even as a young coach and how much he respected them. For those that don't follow the Seminoles and don't really understand the impact, just how big of a deal is their head coach and how well-respected is he among college baseball coaching circles?
Yeah, he's one of those institutions of the game. I mean, he's the biggest coach in D1 baseball history with over 2,000 wins. He's got the highest active winning percentage of any current coach, like 73.3. Been to 16 World Series. They've never won at Florida State, you know, and they've met their demise at the hands of LSU a couple of times. But they've been a consistent power year after year. This is not one of his better teams. Yeah, they were one of the last four teams in the tournament. They had a RPI of 50 after the ACC tournament, but they went to Georgia and stormed through that regional, scored 35 runs in three games, including two wins over Georgia, who was the number four national seed and the host team. So they're really, really good.
Talking with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Rab, about a month ago, everyone felt like the sky was falling for the LSU baseball program. We even had a couple callers here talking about Paul Menary. Maybe time for change. He's like Les Miles. Things have gotten stale. And yet here we are. It's June, and there's baseball at Alex Box Stadium. Your thoughts on the job Paul Menary has done with this year's team with all the injuries and, you know, not living up to expectations for a good portion of the season, yet here we are, and they have another chance just two wins away of getting back to Omaha.
We all understand LSU baseball has very high expectations. You've got won six national titles, been to 18 College World Series since 1986. And won all these SEC titles and tournaments and all that sort of thing. There's going to be high expectations every year, and it's going to be a disappointment when you don't do well. And they were the preseason number one, but their pitching staff is racked by injuries. They had a few issues, you know, with the offense just not, you know, coming through with the clutch hitting. Lost a lot of midweek games, but they found they've gotten healthier. Their pitching is healthy or more so than it has been all season, probably with the return of Cole Henry to the rotation. And we're going to see if he starts the game Saturday afternoon or whether it's Landon Marceau, but I think it's going to be one of those two. And so they're rounding into form. As Josh Smith said after they beat Southern Miss to win the regional, the LSU shortstop, that, you know, we were the preseason number one team in some of the polls. So I think he's done a good job. Look, LSU, I guess by saying all that, LSU fans have a right to have been disappointed, and they're going to be disappointed if they don't win Super Regional and make it to Omaha. Then they're going to be disappointed if they go to Omaha and don't win the national championship. but LSU fans have not really experienced what a true down year is. You know, Florida, won the national title 2 years ago. They had to go on the road, and they didn't make out of the regional. Virginia won a national title recently. They didn't make it to the tournament. TCU barely eked into the tournament. They're considered a national power. And then we talk about a team like USC that's won the most national championships. Texas, who beat LSU early in the season, I don't think they made the tournament either. You know, they swept LSU in Austin. That kind of ended in an anchor on LSU's RPI a little bit, that series loss. So So they've done okay. They've done okay this year. And I think it was important, though, for Mineri to get his team to this point, at least, so that to kind of ease the pressure on him going into next season. Because I think if they didn't at least host a regional for two straight years, because they had to go to Oregon State last year, it would have made things a little uncomfortable going into 2020.
We're talking with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Rab, the performance of both Landon Marceau and Cole Henry, the two freshman pitchers, was phenomenal over the weekend in the NCAA regional. It gives this team a huge boost if they can get that type of performances moving forward. They both seem to be healthy and have kind of returned to form. You mentioned it earlier in your comments. You expect either Henry or Marceau to go Saturday and then the other one to go Sunday, right? Does that mean if a game three is necessary that it would be Eric Walker?
I think so. I think Walker, you know, he had kind of pitched okay for a few innings and things kind of ran aground for him in the regional. And he had kind of a shaky start to the LSU's game he pitched against Mississippi State in the SEC tournament. So he's the number three pitcher right now. And of course they've got Hess in the bullpen. The bullpen has, you kind of look for what is the strength of this LSU team? And I would say right now it's the depth of their bullpen. Hess and Beck and Peterson and Bettmeyer pitched well in the game the other night against Southern Miss. He was unexpected to pitch. That was another plus because he's been out. So I think and of course Devin Fontenot. They've got some arms, and you know they can go in long relief. But obviously, you'd like a nice long starting outing from one of these young pitchers, whoever is the one they go with on Saturday. I think they're going to go with Henry. If I had to, I'm purely guessing. But then considering the fact that he pitched five innings through 85 pitches against in the regional, I think that he's the one they're going to go with to start the series and then come back with Marceau. But we'll see what happens. Mineri's going to make that announcement tomorrow.
We're talking with Scott Rabelais of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Rab, I want to talk about Twani. I want to talk about Antoine Duplantis, a former Lafayette High star over the weekend. At the regional, he ties Eddie Furness's record, has that great moment on Saturday, and I was there at the box for that, where he gets a chance in the ninth, and then they intentionally walk him, and the home crowd wasn't too pleased about that. But then he breaks the record on Sunday. This is a team-first guy, a hell of a ball player, one of the best to ever do it at LSU. My question to you is this. Am I supposed to believe that there's over 300 other amateur baseball players, either high school or college, that are better ball players than Antoine Duplantis, because he doesn't get taken in until the 12th round?
You know, he's a very good player, but I mean, he didn't make, he wasn't an All-American like Eddie Furness was, the guy whose record he broke. He's a very good, solid player. I mean, you get the hits record in college baseball. You set a record like this with longevity and consistency, not necessarily by being one of the great players guys who are going to go out after their junior year, like Josh Smith, who's batting about 30 points higher than Antoine Duplantis this year. I think he's wonderful. He's a wonderful young man. He's always great to talk to, and I think he's been a great player for LSU, and I think he deserves to have his jersey retired one day and put up there on the facade of Alex Box Stadium, like Eddie Furness's name is up there. But I was not surprised where he went, especially being a senior. Now, if he'd had a great year and come out as a junior, maybe he would have been drafted higher. But where he went, it sounds about right. But he'll have a chance to prove himself in the pros and forward. Not a bad year for the Duplantis family athletically, between him and Mondo, who his coach said not too long ago, he'll break the world record one day in the pole vault.
Rab, one quick question for you, and then we'll let you go, brother. You see Duplantis, for example, gets drafted in the 7th round last year, decides to come back, doesn't get drafted until the 12th round because big league ball clubs have all the power. And it almost comes off, and you've seen this, and he's not the only one, Jake Mangum at Mississippi State, who has the all-time SEC hit record. He didn't get drafted until later as well. Can you blame kids for not coming back for their senior season? Because I know there's the argument of, well, you know, it's all about the team first and everything like that, and we love when the guys come back for that senior season and come back for that extra year. But time and time again, the way the professional sports world works, they really don't value you coming back for a senior season. It actually helps them financially because they can get you cheaper. Do you blame a kid for leaving after his junior season?
Well, the way it's structured, no, you can't. I mean, you know, the great players, if you recruit a great player, like LSU had Maurice Hampton, the right. two-sport star from Memphis. So he's going to he's apparently turned down $1.8 million, and he's going to come to LSU play defensive back and be an outfielder for LSU. He was the first guy to win Mr. Baseball and Mr. Football in the same year in the state of Tennessee. So pretty good talent.
Yeah, yeah.
You expect to have him for 3 years. I mean, he's going to go play, you know, pro football or go sign with a major league team after 3 years. If you get a player for four, it's just laying up, like you did with Furness, or like you did with Antoine Duplantis. It's not what you come to expect, because, like you said, they could have gone out of high school and you got them for 3 years, and you want to, they don't have that any leverage with the pro teams. If they wait till their senior year, they're like, it's pretty much a take it or leave it thing at that point. So now you can't blame kids. It's just kind of like the way back in the day when athletes were only eligible for 3 years, you know, in football and basketball. You know, Pete Maravich played 3 years, or Charles right. Alexander played 3 years in school. So it's not ideal for the schools, but it's what you come to expect. The worst part is to me is that the draft comes right in the middle of the NCAA tournament.
Oh, so awful. So awful,
and,
Scott.
You know, guys are they pulled a player from the UCLA game the other night because he just gotten drafted. You figure out what he's going to do. You know, it's like this should not be. You know, can you imagine Nick Saban putting up with that?
Oh,
you know,
God.
In the middle of
oh,
when
no.
they're playing Tennessee. Hey, Nick, you guys just got drafted.
Well, hey, well, Rab, Saban usually gets a lot of stuff done when he wants changes. It usually happens. Maybe the baseball coaches in the SEC should call up Nick and be like, Nick, we need a favor here. Can you make this happen? Can you make them exactly. hold the draft later? We'd greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, really.
Rab, I appreciate you as always, man. Tell the folks what's coming to your byline and with the column there at the Baton Rouge Advocate. What you got coming up, man?
Yeah, I just posted a column this morning about the whole LSU regional, how you know, Mike Martin and Florida State are the sentimental favorite, and LSU's kind of in the role of the black hat this time, except for two places, among LSU fans and in Omaha, where they are looking for LSU to come up there because they come in droves and spend lots of money. So that's up there right now on theadvocate.com, neworleansadvocate.com.
Rab, appreciate your time as always, brother. See you at the box out there on Sunday, man, and have a good weekend.
You too. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Ray.
Scott Rabelais, Baton Rouge Advocate, joining us there, breaking down LSU baseball. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we will put a bow, a big red shiny bow, on today's show. Once again, reminder, flash flood warning still in effect. Lafayette Parish, St. Landry, Vermilion, Evangeline, okay, Acadia, y'all be safe out there. Avoid high water. Do not go around the barricades. They're up around. Make sure to be careful out there on the roads. We got to hit a break. More after this on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I want to thank all of our guests that came on today's show. John Marques from thetowntalk.com, James Yasko, Limit Time Time Podcast, Les East from CrescentCitySports.com, and of course, Scott Rabelais from the Baton Rouge Advocate. Before we go, we mentioned it during the show that Mondu Duplantis fell short of winning the NCAA Outdoor Pole Vaulting Championship, but an LSU Tiger did win a national championship. Congratulations goes out to Javon Harrison. He is the NCAA Outdoors Men's Long Jump Champion. Personal record of 26-11 to win the first national title of his career. So congratulations to him. Cody, we asked the people about a poll question quickly. Give us an update on the results, my friend.
Are there really 357 amateur baseball players better than Antoine Duplantis? 38% say there are. So that means 62% say that there are not. 300 plus players better than Antoine. It's closer than I would have thought.
Some LSU fans being honest. I like that.
That's what it seems like, yeah.
Or maybe they're old Acadiana High people that are upset about how 20 played against them back in high school.
I don't know.
Great show. Once again, y'all be careful out there. Flash flood warning in effect for most of the parishes in Acadiana. Please be careful on the road.
Sport of politics still going to come up next, somehow, some way.
Sport of politics, we're going to make it happen. It's coming up next with the mayor, parish president. Y'all be safe out there today. 103.7 The Game.